You're listening to What's Wrong With This Picture? Freaky films and why we frickin' love them. Hi, I'm Lindsay McCulloch.
And I'm Gary Mulholland. And in each episode of What's Wrong With This Picture, we'll be looking at a movie we think is weird and wonderful. We sometimes do include the endings where it's key to what the film is, so please be prepared for that. So anyway, buckle up and join us on a journey to dangerous cities, suburbia, and other fantasy worlds. It's going to be a wild ride.
This episode, we're looking at Holy Smoke, a 1999 film directed by Jane Campion, written by Jane and her sister Anna Campion. It stars Kate Winslet as Ruth, Harvey Keitel as PJ, Julie Hamilton as Ruth's mum Miriam, Daniel Wiley as Ruth's dim-witted brother Robbie, Sophie Lee as his wife Yvonne, and a very underused Pam Grier as PJ's partner Carol. Gary, what's it all about?
Young Australian beauty Ruth Barron becomes involved with a cult while visiting India on holiday. When she doesn't come home, her family feel they have to intervene. Ruth's mother goes to India and, knowing that her stubborn daughter won't return just because she asks her to, convinces her that her perfectly healthy and essentially uncaring father is dying. But in fact, the family have hired America's foremost cult exeter, PJ Waters, to deprogram Ruth and bring her out of the thrall of Guru Baba and back to her middle-class Australian life. Ruth and PJ are isolated in a shack in the Aussie wilderness, where PJ's attempts to break Ruth see him questioning his faith, his relationship, his masculinity, and ultimately his sanity. Lindsay, what's wrong with this picture?
I feel I can sum this one up in two words and just say Harvey Keitel. He brings a really weirdly funny energy, I think, to this. So he's this cool American, but when we first see him, he's wearing shades, he's got cowboy boots, he's got this moustache, he's got this dyed hair. But gradually his cool begins to peel off. He's kind of drunk on his own power in this relationship and kind of expects these Australian rubes to just kind of fall under his spell, Ruth included. But Yvonne, the kind of ditzy sister-in-law, clearly has a thing for him, and which he kind of encourages, or certainly doesn't discourage, and happily accepts a blowjob from her as if it's his due. So he's this kind of very cool person. But because this whole film is about manipulation, so Ruth's manipulation by Baba and the cult, or Ruth's manipulation by her family to bring her back home, and then suddenly the boots on the other foot, the cowboy boots on the other foot, because who's manipulating who? Who's kind of grooming who when they're out in this hut together?
Yeah, that is absolutely key. Who is manipulating who? It's actually said by the mother in an early scene. Because she actually says to Ruth, "I think you're manipulating me," when Ruth is talking to her, you know, and so that's a very, very key theme. And I suppose the other key theme is belief systems.
Yeah.
Why is a Christian middle class materialist belief system any better than a post-Hindu kind of vaguely mystical belief system? Is one better than the other? What does is a controlling father who is both uncaring and really, really unpleasant when he comes into contact with Ruth, any more of a damaging influence than some guru somewhere in India who's plainly conning all the nice middle class white people? It's a film questioning belief systems, and it has its brilliant moments and its flawed moments. It's a flawed work, and I think Jane Campion's career, I mean, obviously she has continued, but there was quite a break. Not a break straight after this film. She made one film after this, I think, and then there was quite a break. And I do wonder if the reception that Holy Smoke got as part of that, because it was only a few years after The Piano, which was her massive, massive hit, you know, commercially smashed it, but also critically acclaimed and loved and Oscar-laden and whatever. And this film, It came out in 1999, which I've spoken about in this podcast as being a year which was absolutely saturated with great films. And it went under the radar, and it stimulated a certain amount of controversy, and people were iffy about it.
Yeah, I think that's true. I mean, having rewatched it again for the podcast, I did really like it. There's a great chemistry between the two of them. Now, you've got to remember, Harvey Keitel at this point is unbelievably 60 years old when this film comes out. He looks amazing.
He looks amazing.
I mean, he's got this bad dye job, but that's his character. He's meant to have this bad dye job. She's young. She's like 25 in real life and is meant to be possibly younger than that in the film.
Yeah.
So the 35-year difference between them, and yet I didn't find it creepy. They're both very sexy in it. It's something that you believe. So part of her manipulation is a kind of sexual manipulation of this older guy. And we should say that he has become this cult Exeter following his own experience in a cult. So he's a kind of self exited person from this cult, and this is where he brings his knowledge. And so, having tried a kind of battle of wills when they're in this hut in the country. So the format of the film is there's kind of wider community and family scenes at the start and at the end. For most of the middle of the film, it's just the two of them. It's kind of a two-hander.
Yeah.
Could be quite theatrical, but not annoying, like theatrical things can often be. And that's partly because of the chemistry. So having kind of failed to best him in a battle of wills, she decides that she's going to best him in a sex. And so part of what he's trying to get her to do is to lose the trappings of the cult, and that includes the sari that she wears.
Yeah.
And so at one point he wakes up to smell burning in the middle of this hut, and she has set her sari on fire and she's naked.
Yeah.
And she just appears kind of naked, this young female body. And at first he's like, no, wait a minute, that's not what we're here for. But of course, he's like a middle-aged man, like an older man. Of course he's not going to resist this. And also, he sees this as part of his power, as part of his due. He is this kind of sexual presence. Mm. And so they start this sexual relationship. Kate Winslet is naked in this, and she is sometimes an actress for whom the question, if the plot demanded it, would you consider keeping your clothes on? as Dennis Pennis said to Demi Moore. It was Demi Moore. All those years ago. and so she is partly that. But Harvey Keitel gets his kit off in this one as well.
Absolutely.
As he does in The Piano, as he does, as we've spoken about, in Bad Lieutenant. So he's also a person. But it works in this film. They're out in the outback. There is just the two of them. But thinking about Kate Winslet and getting naked really reminded me of this story that I mentioned to you before. When I was when Titanic was out, and I took my stepson at the time, who was 10, to see it. He was 10 at the time, I should say. And there's a scene, and I know you won't have seen this scene because I told you just to watch the end of the film. There's a scene where Leonardo DiCaprio is drawing her, and she's topless. She gets her boobs out, and my stepson said, kind of whispered to me, "Now that she's got her breasts out, she'll never work again."
Ah, oh, the innocence of youth.
How cute is that?
That is amazing.
But anyway,
brilliant.
She did work again, and she does some great work in Holy Smoke.
She does, and I think it is a film that is very, very dependent on their chemistry. They both bring their best performances. I think sort of sticking with what's weird about it is that it's one of the many weird things about it is it seems a little unsure whether it's a comedy or a drama. I think it's two people who are very ambitiously going, we can square that circle. This is going to be a drama with funny bits. Or it's going to be a black comedy, or whichever way you want to look at it. And I think sometimes the tones don't work together. I think Jane Campion is many things, and many wonderful things, but a director of comedy, I don't think she is. And there are a couple of very slapstick moments in the film which fall flat and don't fit. And when the film really, really takes off, is these two people in a cabin in the middle of nowhere. striking sparks off each other. And I guess the other weird thing about it, a very noticeable thing about it, particularly having talked about Harvey Keitel in Bad Lieutenant, is that Harvey Keitel allows all of the things that he's built up over many years about machismo and maleness and whatever to be absolutely stripped away on screen, and he loses his dignity completely. And it is just, it's bound to be in the script, you know. It's not like he turned up on set and went, oh, really, you want me to do this? Mm-hmm. But what a guy, because... I mean, could you see De Niro doing this? Could you see, you know, well, actually, he has played transsexual in the film. But I don't know. Many of his contemporaries, Al Pacino, whatever, just like, yeah, I'm going to put on a dress and lipstick. Mm. Spoiler alert. And I'm going to have my masculine, I'm going to allow a young female actress to question my masculinity, my age, and everything about me that is cool.
Yeah, and also my coolness and
my coolness
and my sexual prowess. So she says it at one point. So she doesn't know at this point, although it's happened, she doesn't know that Yvonne has given them that blowjob. She doesn't know.
No.
And yet she sees him. She skewers him mercilessly. So she says to him at one point, and she totally guesses who he is, she mocks him. You're so briny, you're so big, can I suck your dick? I mean, Australian accent, Australian accent.
It was good though.
Can I suck your dick? And that is what's happened. That is how Yvonne has seen him.
Yeah.
You're so brainy, you're so big, can I suck your dick? Not those words, but this hero worship that Yvonne has had. And Ruth sees it, and she sees it, and she pins him.
And you wonder how many times he has taken advantage of young women with daddy issues. You know, was that a one-off? Is getting involved with one of his clients a one-off? Or is this just what he's been doing the whole time since he became a cult exeter?
Yeah.
Is that part of, as you say, his perks of the job? He plays this brilliantly. There's this bit where he's in the house with the family explaining what he does. And there's this wonderful little thing that Harvey does where he's explaining, yeah, I've had 187 successful cult exits. This is what makes me so much better than everybody else. And he gets a comb out of his pocket and puts his hair back in place. And it's very casual. It's not done in some arch, look at what I'm doing kind of way. It's just this simple show of his vanity. Of course, any woman that kind of looks at him like the sister does and sort of, you know, pays him attention, he's just, I am really, I am so great.
I am daddy cool.
I am daddy cool. But, you know, in his set, and I do think the costume design is great, by the way, his sense of cool is basically a pair of shades, some dyed hair and some black clothes. There's nothing beyond that.
Yeah.
Which is kind of what it's trying to say.
There's quite a sly little scene at the airport when he first arrives. So the luggage trolleys, for some reason, are all kind of locked together. Mm. And there's this guy, this is a wordless scene. There's this other young guy who's trying to separate them. And he just comes along, kind of shakes it marginally, and then they all magically separate. And he just gives this guy a look like, come on.
Yeah, yeah. And then strides off in slow motion. I think one of the things the film does is, because it's not that many years past Reservoir Dogs and Pulp Fiction, and I definitely think it has those parts in mind, those rediscoveries as Harvey Keitel is cool, you know, the slow motion walk out of the airport and the black clothes and the shades. I definitely think it's conscious about, right, we're taking his Tarantino roles and we're stripping them out of their cool clothes and we're putting him in a dress.
Yeah.
And this is quite a thing to do.
And this is part of his capitulation. I mean, she's kind of won, but has she kind of won? Because, she does kind of win, and yet she is also won over by him.
Yeah.
And I guess I have a question for you. So there's this age difference between you, between them. There's this kind of power difference.
Mm.
Is this a love story?
That's a brilliant question. Yes and no. I mean, I think, and this is why I do think we have to talk a little about the ending in this particular case. So I should say to people at this point, if you're interested and intrigued by this film, Holy Smoke is available definitely for a video on demand, and you don't want to hear about the ending, you should go off, watch it now and come back. But is it a love story? Yes, but I think Jane Campion opted, and according to the commentary that I listened to on the DVD, which is Anna Campion and Kate Winslet, it was Jane Campion's insistence that the bit was tacked on the end that made it clear they didn't end up together.
Right.
She didn't want the audience coming out thinking that they actually ended up together. And quite right too, because there's some interesting choices made in this film. And I know I haven't exactly answered your question about whether it's a love story or not, but what do you think about the choice Jane Campion makes when he punches her?
Yeah, I think that's really interesting. So they're having a tussle. She's trying to escape from him, and he's taken away her shoes, but she's made shoes out of tying books together and tying them onto her feet. So she is kind of clumping across the desert, and he is chasing her in the red dress. And he's in this red dress probably for about the last 20 minutes of the film, actually.
Yeah, definitely. It's
a significant thing that he's wearing this dress. So he kind of catches up to her. They have a tussle. She's kind of flailing, trying to slap him. And he punches her and knocks her out. And is it deliberate? Is it a kind of... I don't know. I don't want to think of it as an abusive thing, but you could think of their whole sexual relationship actually as an abusive thing, unless you see that the power kind of shifting between them. So yeah, he punches her, knocks her out. Is it quotes for her own good, or is it anger? I don't know. What's your take on it?
I think there's a choice made that I don't like. I think it fits within the story that she has made him so powerless that he would decide to take power back by being violent. My issue is with doing it in slow motion in an angle where you can see the size of Harvey Keitel's arms, very muscular, and then a full punch, and then it's all in slow motion as if this is some kind of exciting thing that we should all watch. I don't think it's a great choice. Jane Campion's part. I think it feels, I don't know. It just feels unnecessarily sadistic. And I kind of question whether she would still have a love for him after he has punched her in the jaw so hard that he knocks her out.
Yes. Or whether she does have a love for him, or whether she feels sorry for him, or whether she can kind of see. So the scene that follows this is that her family kind of basically come to rescue her because they've understood by this point that he is kind of
out
sleeping
of
with her. So her family come to rescue her in the truck, her brother and the brother's wife, I think. And so she's sitting in the front of the truck. Harvey Keitel has by this point been beaten up by the brothers, and he's in the back of the open bed truck. They're all sitting in the cabin of the truck, and she says, "Stop the truck, stop the truck." She's looking back, she sees him, stop the truck. She gets out, she gets in the back of the truck with him, and one possible ending, as you say, there's another ending tacked on it. One possible ending is the truck goes off, they're both sitting in the back of the truck, and she's kind of cradling his head.
Yeah. I think it would have been very brave to end the film there and have the audience think, Christ, did she get together with him? And I absolutely do understand Jane Campion's choice of like, no, we don't want them to think that.
I don't know if it might have been better to be open-ended, but...
I agree.
But I understand
why she did it.
Yes, absolutely. But it is given, there's a little coda that gives it a very definite ending where they have gone their separate ways. But nonetheless, there is some communication between them that does kind of suggest a love between them.
Yeah, I mean, she says, I don't know why I love you, but I do, essentially. And he expresses his gratitude and film end. It's artistically, there is no doubt that that flatbed truck going off into the distance with her cradling him in his arms is a better ending.
Yeah.
Whether it leaves you feeling uncomfortable or not.
Yeah.
It looks like a tactile ending.
Yeah, and I think you mentioned the difference in tone in the film, and I think that is an issue. If all the way through it's deadly serious, I think this film's better. Like you say, it does have comedy in it. So Yvonne, the sister-in-law, is played by kind of the baddie from Muriel's Wedding, if you remember her. She's like the bitchy mean girl from Muriel's Wedding, and she brings that same kind of energy here as well. It's interesting to me because you said to me probably about 3-4 months ago now, oh, have you seen Holy Smoke recently? And I was like, not sure if I've ever seen it. So I watched it 3-4 months ago and you were like, it's great, it's brilliant, I liked it, blah, blah, blah. Now it sounds like watching it again for this, you've got kind of slightly
I've got some issues with it. I still think it's a great film, and which is why I wanted to do it for this podcast, and I still think it's a great film. And I think Jane Campion is such a great director, and you can see it in so many great scenes in this movie. Of course, the two actors bring it, but the way she frames them and kind of plays with camera movement and perspective in those scenes is key to why it looks so great and why it doesn't feel like theatre. So I think it's asking some brave questions about why does Western civilization, in inverted commas, because Australia isn't in the West, but Western civilization so convinced that it's the best way. You know, why are we so sure that our way is the best and that anybody who does anything different is evil in some way? And I think it does those things well. And I think its casting is brilliant. And at that point, I want to bring up Julie Hamilton, who plays the mother. Ruth's mother, who is wonderful, and the other great part of the film, her character has to carry playing a comedy mum while also bringing a lot of pathos, and she does it perfectly, and it wasn't the start of anything for her, unfortunately. So I still think it's a really, really great film. However, there are choices in it and flaws in it that I can really see. On a closer watching, that was definitely one of them. That punch made me feel really uncomfortable. Maybe it's supposed to make me feel uncomfortable, and that's fair enough. But I didn't think the slow-mo was a great idea. And there are bits of the slapstick comedy that the kind of brothers do that I think is too big.
Yeah, I think I would concur, and I rewatched The Piano as well for this because I hadn't seen The Piano in a while, and like you say, you know, lauded Oscar this and music that, and you know, that's my criticism. Oscar this and music that. But I found out actually that Holly Hunter actually played the piano in that. Did you know that?
I did not know that.
Holly Hunter playing the piano.
Bloody hell!
Anyway, wow. And I learned that that's also a film with flaws. It's by no means a perfect film. Harvey Keitel's great in it. Holly Hunter's great in it. Sam Neill's great in it. But the ending is kind of, it's two-part. It's too easily resolved in a way. It kind of feels like, oh, it turns out there was nothing at stake after all. And so I do wonder about Jane Campion. And I don't know if you've done more research on her, but I know you suggested to me last year, I think, her Western, The Power of the Dog, for this. And I didn't like that film at all. And I said to you, I think the only weird thing is that you would cast Benedict Cumberbatch as a cowboy. I just did not get that film at all, much though I love Jesse Plemons and much though he's great in it. But did you have other stuff on Jane Campion that you want to see?
Not really. I mean, it's quite interesting. I suppose I just had this thing in my head that she'd made a billion films. She hasn't. She's made, you know, 3 or 4 since Holy Smoke. And The Power of the Dog was a bit of a comeback. There'd been a real lull. She hadn't made anything. And it was really interesting that it got Oscar noms and so much praise. And I agree. I I really did like it, as you know. But I absolutely got why you didn't. I think she's a really interesting filmmaker, which sometimes is faint praise, isn't it? Oh, she's really interesting. But I think all of her films, there is something that doesn't quite hang together. Maybe it's too pat an ending. Maybe it's a casting choice. Maybe it's something like this where you kind of think, it feels like you're confused about how far you want to go with this. You know, do you want to go dead on and full on and satirize both men and their egos and, you know, Western belief systems or belief systems that derive from Christianity? Do you want to just go full on, or do you want to pussyfoot around it a little bit so people aren't too harsh to you afterwards? And it maybe that's what I felt this time when I watched Holy Smoke, and therefore it I think some of its great strengths, I think the scenes in India are fantastic. I think there's a really interesting scene, which is the one where the mum ends up having the asthma attack, which kind of persuades Ruth to go back. And, you know, she's introduced her to the cult, and then, you know, there's something about smelling her. And I was just sort of sitting there thinking, let's say Matt had joined the cult, my son, this is, and, you know, I was playing the open-minded, yes, I will go with you, yes, I will see that they're as benign as you talk about, and then a whole bunch of people swarmed around me, sniffing me. I think I'd probably freak out too. And it was just brilliantly done and brilliantly cut, and her panic, you could really feel it. It was visceral. And obviously, one of the things with the ending, because we've talked about the ending now, is, you know, Ruth and her mum live happily ever after in the cult.
I don't think they're in the cult.
No?
They go back to India, but they're not in the cult.
Oh, okay.
They're working at Ruth's working at an animal sanctuary. I didn't get the feeling that they were back in the cult.
Oh, okay.
Maybe I didn't take it from that. But there are a couple of lovely bits kind of associated with that Indian mysticism. So when Ruth is first kind of taken aback, you know, she gets kind of poked in the forehead by Baba the Guru, and then she sees this kind of animation, and she sees lights, and her third eye kind of opens up. And actually, later on, when she appears naked in front of PJ, he sees sees her as this kind of golden Indian goddess, the one with all the arms, but it's Kate Winslet and her body and her face.
Yeah.
And so there is this kind of... I understand what you're saying about kind of Western belief systems and stuff like that. I didn't think of the cult as anything other than a cult. I didn't think it was, I didn't see it as that's totally as acceptable as any other way of life. It did seem like this woman's kind of looking for something, and she thinks she's found it, but she's wrong. And so there is that kind of fetishization of that mysticism, at the same time as depicting India cinematically as like a terrible place to go. And I kind of feel that often in films.
This is interesting. We've watched it. I don't think, I know that scene is as uncomfortable as it's supposed to be, but I think it made India look beautiful and amazing. And I don't think it did show it as a terrible place to go. And that first scene where, you know, Kate Winslet is poked in the forehead and, you know, everything goes all whatever. That's her friend's telling of the story.
Yes, of course.
It's her embellishing.
Of course.
You know, it's that thing of, right, I'm going to go to the family with big, big shock horror news, you know. And it's literally by the time she's got to there and told them, he did a magic trick on her and brainwashed her, you know. And
that's a really good point. I did not make that connection, but you're right.
But nevertheless, it is connected to the beautiful thing at the end where, you know, Harvey Keitel's broken, utterly broken. Like that scene of him from the back in his dress staggering like through the desert, kind of going, is just funny. And then the next thing, he's looking up and, it's Kate Winslet in,
you know, as a Vishnu or whatever, is beautiful. But it's his over glamorization and exoticization of her and what's gone on. So they're playing, Anna and Jane Campion are playing with Indian mythology and Indian mysticism. I don't think they're saying...
And it's Western reception.
And what people
think of it. Because, you know, at one point, God, we're really just going to go right through this film, but at one point, Harry Keitel says, you know, at the end when he's in his dress, he's like, let's go to India. We'll join the ashram together. Baba can fix us.
That's
Baba
fantastic.
Can help us. And it's this kind of absolute revocation of what he's dedicated his life to.
Absolutely. And of course, yeah, he's given us this information that he exited a cult himself. And it's kind of like, oh, it's still there in him.
Yeah.
It's still there in him. You know, and it essentially, you know, Pam Grier, we get a fairly... Pam Grier, who plays his... Is it his wife or his partner?
His partner.
Yeah. So, you know, we get the feeling that she... has fixed him, don't we?
Yes.
I mean, basically, she's fixed him, and then when it's all gone tits up, he's got to go back to her so she can fix him again. And you know, and that's why the ending is a little pat for me, because fixing him involves him, you know, like writing a novel and you know and having kids, and it's kind of like, oh yeah, you're right. but why is it her job to fix him? On top of that, but. It really is quite an anti-male film. I mean, all the male characters are dicks. Even the gay male is a dick. And it's not a film that likes men, and that's okay. I mean, that's okay. And I think that's what Jane Campion could do at that point. She could get that made with Hollywood money and big stars, a film that is pretty lacerating towards men, full stop.
Yeah. And I think, you know, that midlife crisis stuff that Harvey Keitel's got going on. And so Kate Winslet, Ruth just does say to him at one point, oh, you're dyed hair and you're this age and you're just an old man and you're fucking me and you're just this dirty old man kind of thing. And he says to her, I was young once too and handsome. And she just yells back, I wasn't born!
Yeah.
And it's... It's funny, but it also seems quite important to me that kind of generation gap or whatever it was.
And you know, his simpering about when she starts to mock him, you know, and you know, the whole thing about writing be kind on her forehead, it's like, don't hurt me. Weren't you Mr. Macho, Mr. Nothing Touches Me, Mr. Cool, Mr. You know, and one young girl, you know, mocks your masculinity a little bit and you're a pathetic sort of...
But the other side of that for me, and this has just struck me now that you've said that, so she skewers him about, you're so big, you're so brainy, let me suck your dick kind of thing.
I love that. That's really good. That's such a good impression. it's great voice.
So she skewers him and he skewers her by writing that because she's like, I'm in this cult and it's all love and life and there's more to life than blah, blah, blah. Mm. And she is absolutely being incredibly mean and cruel and vicious to him.
Yeah.
And he's skewering her by saying, you hypocrite, you pretend that you're living in this light and you're just a mean girl like you always were.
Yeah.
And so,
good point.
They know each other.
Yeah.
They know each other on this kind of level that maybe these two crazy kids could have made it work. I don't know.
Makes me quite uncomfortable, Dan, the idea that they could have made it work. But yeah, no, it's a flawed film.
Yeah.
But I think it's a really brave film. And I wish it had got a bigger audience and that more people would have seen it and made up their own mind about what it's trying to say.
Do you think we've persuaded more people to see it today?
I hope so.
With our faint praise?
I hope so because it's not just, is it about, you know, us, you know, people on podcasts or reviewers or just being enthusiastic. It's kind of pointing out that there's something really interesting going on there. Honestly, if you've not seen Harvey Keitel in a red dress with or is it pink?
No, it's red.
A red dress with lipstick on, then this is something you need to see.
Yeah.
Being really, really insulted by Kate Winslet. This is a thing you need to see. Seriously, it's absolutely unmissable. And he really, you know, we were talking, as I said, about Bad Lieutenant and about how he's such a, he, as an actor, he's so willing to strip himself bare, and not just literally, mm-hmm. but emotionally, etc. But the step he takes here in a screenplay which is plainly mocking men, and mocking men like the men he's played, not necessarily Harvey Keitel, like the men he's played, the characters he's played, to allow himself to be so kind of humiliated on screen and to mock himself so completely, I think is just another testament to how great he is.
Yeah.
And Kate Winslet, she has to hold a screen with some, you know, one of the best actors of his generation. And my God, does she.
Yeah, she does.
She's
it. She is a great actress. And this is only a couple of years after Titanic, where she has, you know, we've spoken here about her debut, Heavenly Creatures, which she's brilliant in.
Yeah.
Almost, but not quite as brilliant as her colleague in that film, Melanie Lynskey.
Yeah.
And this is 2 years after Titanic. And so after Titanic, I remember reading something that Harvey Keitel's like, this is testament to her kind of integrity and intelligence, that she's not just building on Titanic to do more of the same, to do these massive blockbusters, to be in a kind of film. She's doing this, and she did a film called Hideous Kinky, kind of similar thing, which is also playing kind of a hippie mom, isn't she? I haven't seen that one.
I've not seen it, but she makes brave choices, and she made brave choices straight after Titanic. Mm. That was her Queen of the Universe moment, and she could have just cashed in doing rom-coms. Rom-coms and, like you say, I don't know, superhero blockbusters, whatever.
Yeah.
She didn't. She did bloody Holy Smoke, this really weird, awkward, controversial little film that involved being a bitch to Harvey Keitel for 2 hours. And stripping naked and showing her hairy armpits off to the world. You know, it was a bloody brave choice.
Yeah, absolutely. I think let's go right to the end. How many red dresses, Gary, are you giving it for weirdness and for quality?
For weirdness, 8. For quality, 7.
I'm going weirdness, 8. The tone is a wee bit jarring in terms of the quality, because it's like I think I wished I had seen the fully serious version of this that's just drama and no comedy. Other people might wish there was even more comedy in it, and maybe it's like a Muriel's Wedding type thing.
That is spot on.
But I want to see the serious version of that. I have to say, for me, it is saved by the leads. They've got great chemistry. Their acting in it is both immense. The middle section especially, maybe the more serious part, is I think great. So 8 for weird. I'm going to give it 8. For quality, because of Harvey Keitel and because of Kate Winslet. It is worth seeing.
It's more than worth seeing.
Absolutely. So go ahead and do that.
Till next time.
Till next time.
What's Wrong With This Picture is brought to you by Lindsay McCulloch and Gary Mulholland, and is recorded by Russ Keffert at Audio Egg. Music composed and performed by Russ Keffert.